lamase shamulam. Durasaya kama dukhangri pasya. Tata sachaham parivo dukamaha. Samana shilam grihameda denum. Upeyi van mulam ase shamulam. Durasaya kama dukhangri pasya. Se shamulam. Tachaham parivodukamaha. Samana silam grihameda denum. Upevan mulam ase shamulam. Durasaya kama dukhangri pasya. Tata sachaham parivodukamaha. Samana shilam grihameda denum. Kevamulam se shamulam. Dayasa kama dukhangri pasya. Tata sachaham parivo dukamaha. Samana shilam grihameda denum. Upevan mulam ase shamulam. Durasaya kama dukhangri pasya. Vaishnavis. Tata sachaham parivo dukamaha. Shilam grihameda denum. Chakama jama pasya. Tatasa ham pedavodu kamaha. Peyavan mulam ase shamulam. Rasaya kama dukhangri pasya. Tata sachaham parivoda kamaha. Tata. Similarly, Sa, myself. Cha, also. Aham, I. Parivodu, kamaha. Desiring to marry. Samana Shilam. A girl of like disposition. Grihamedha. In married life. Denum. A cow of plenty. Upeivan. Have approached. Mulam. The root. Lotus feet. Asesha. Of everything. Mulam. The source. Durasaya. With lustful desire. Kama. Dugha. Yielding all desires. Agripasha. Of you who are the tree. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. Therefore, desiring to marry a girl of like disposition, who may prove to be a veritable cow of plenty in my married life, to satisfy my lustful desire, I too have sought the shelter of your lotus feet, which are the source of everything, for you are like a desire tree. Purport. In spite of his condemning persons who approach the Lord for material advantages, Kardama Muni expressed his material inability and desire before the Lord by saying, although I know that nothing material should be asked from you, I nevertheless desire to marry a girl of like disposition. The phrase, like disposition, is very significant. Formerly, boys and girls of similar disposition were married. The similar natures of the boy and girl were united in order to make them happy. Not more than 25 years ago, and perhaps it is still current, parents in India used to consult the horoscope of the boy and girl to see whether there would be factual union in their psychological conditions. These considerations are very important. Nowadays, marriage takes place without such consultation, and therefore, soon after the marriage, there is divorce and separation. Formerly, husband and wife used to live together peacefully throughout their whole lives, but nowadays, it is a very difficult task. Kardama Muni wanted to have a wife of like disposition because a wife is necessary to assist in spiritual and material advancement. It is said that a wife yields the fulfillment of all desires in religion, economic development, and sense gratification. If one has a nice wife, he is to be considered a most fortunate man. In astrology, a man is considered fortunate who has great wealth, very good sons, or a very good wife. Of these three, one who has a very good wife is considered the most fortunate. Before marrying, one should select a wife of like disposition and not be enamored by so-called beauty or other attractive features for sense gratification. In the Bhagavatam 12th canto, it is said that in Kali Yuga, marriage will be based on the consideration of sex life. As soon as there is deficiency in sex life, the question of divorce will arise. Kardama Muni could have asked his benediction from Uma, for it is recommended in the scriptures that if anyone wants a good wife, he should worship Uma, another name for Durga. But he preferred to worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead because it is recommended in the Bhagavatam that everyone, whether he is full of desires, has no desires, or desires liberation, should worship the Supreme Lord. Of these three classes of men, one tries to be happy by fulfillment of material desires, Another wants to be happy by becoming one with the Supreme. And another, the perfect man, is a devotee. He does not want anything in return from the personality of Godhead. He only wants to render transcendental loving service. In any case, everyone should worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead, for he will fulfill everyone's desire. The advantage of worshiping the Supreme Person is that even if one has desires for material enjoyment, if he worships Krishna, he will gradually become a pure devotee and have no material hankering. Wow. Jai Om Gyana Tamananda Sya Gyananjana Salakaya Chakshusun Malitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobistam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Upagadam Ayam Dadati Swapadanti Kam Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shri Vasari Gaur Bhaktavinda Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare 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 Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare Banchakopa Tubhischa, Kripasindhu Bhivacha, Patitanam Pabinebhyo, Vaishnavibhyo, Namo Namaha. The verse again. Therefore, desiring to marry a girl of like disposition, who may prove to be a veritable cow of plenty in my married life, to satisfy my lustful desire, I too have sought the shelter of your lotus feet, which are the source of everything, for you are like a desire tree. Wow. So we're going to talk today a little bit about these prayers, Kardamuni's prayers, and the Lord's response. And then we'll go into talking about, as mentioned, we'll talk about married life, relationships, and the ultimate relationships. And we'll show a few analogies in between. So here, just starting off, we're in this chapter conversation between Manu and Kardama. And between verses 13 and 22, we're going to see Kardamuni's prayers to the Lord. And they're very nice. Actually, there's one prayer. They kind of capture the essence. There's like one prayer just to capture the essence of these is like, O Lord of unfathomable compassion, I seek the shelter of your lotus feet, the vessel to cross over illusion. Guide this longing heart through the cycles of time. And grant me devotion's vision to see your eternal form in loving service divine. So that's his prayer. So then the Lord responds, is speaking to Kardama Muni. And so this is, we'll see what's said there. But if we go to the, where we are here, this on chapter, I mean text number 13. Kardama Muni was saying, my eyes are successful upon seeing you. So that he's offering prayers in glorification of Vishnu, and is describing him as a reservoir of all existences and pleasure. And to attain the vision of the Lord is the perfection of yoga and meditation. So true devotees actually aspire only to see his eternal form in loving service. And then if we go to the next few verses here, 14 and 15, and he was criticizing the less intelligent who worship him for material things. But then he's saying, I too desire a suitable wife. See, the Lord is so kind that he even blesses those rotting in hellish pleasures. But a true devotee sees his lotus feet as a vessel to cross the ocean of nescience. But material pleasures, it can be attained even by hogs and dogs in hellish situations. But a devotee aspires only for pure devotional service, not selfish pleasures. So in verse 15 today, he's admitting he's praying for a suitable wife, and he admits his inability to renounce material desires. And the Prabhupada in the purport explained how marriage enables advancement in both spiritual and material life when the partners are compatible in disposition. And then if we go to verses 16 to 18, we'll see how material desires, they lead to bondage, but if you surrender to Krishna, that leads to liberation. And how time, it doesn't affect the devotees. So we see in those verses, time is glorified as empowered by the Lord to put a limit on all existence. But devotees, they engage in the Lord's service, they rise above even time's influence. which is very nice. And then we go to verses 19 to 21, where he creates the material world for the jiva's enjoyment and also to cause detachment, you know, in them so they could realize Krishna. So Kardama Muni is offering, he offers that the Lord manifests the world by his own multifarious energies just to give an opportunity for the illusion souls to enjoy. But still, he comes personally with compassion to teach them true knowledge and brings the living beings back to him. So we see that's where he comes as Kapila Muni. And then he prays to the Lord to bless everyone with their he prays that the Lord may bless everyone with their innermost desires, whether enjoyment, liberation, or pure devotional service. So the Lord makes arrangements both within the world and directly from the spiritual realms. And then we go on here to verses 23 to 24, how his devotees' desires are never frustrated. So even though the Lord already knows everything in our hearts and minds and arranges for our desires even before we ask, a sincere devotee is never frustrated or disappointed, regardless of his material desires, because the Lord fulfills them while we at the same time elevates the devotee to the spiritual platform. And then we're going towards the end here. In verses 25 to 29, Manu will offer your daughter. This is where the Lord is responding, actually, from the previous 23 to 31 here. So he's telling him that Manu will come and he'll offer his daughters, and you'll beget 9 daughters, and you also have me as your son. So the Lord here is sanctioning Kardama Muni's desires for household life and a suitable wife. So he's showing how marriage enables both material and spiritual progress when it's properly utilized in service. And then finally, he says, you will attain me. So we see here, actually, one should offer the results of all activities to Krishna because they become sanctified in that way. And then by the Lord's grace, we'll actually attain him. So compassion for all souls and sharing devotional service widely is part of God's instruction. One sees everything relationship with the Lord. And then the Lord will appear, as Kapila will see here, and he'll reveal deep spiritual knowledge to enlighten the world. So this is the mercy of Krishna here. So now we go on here. It's described how the shelter of the lotus feet, which are like a source of everything, for you are like a desire tree. Just imagine a desire tree. Not only can you get all kinds of fruits, but you could get gems and minerals, and you could even get, you could even fulfill desire to go to other planets or to speak, so many things. So it mentioned in, Prabhupada referred to this verse in the purport, how akama sarva kamo va moksha kama udara di tivrene bhakti yogena yajete purusham param, that a person who has broader intelligence, whether he be full of material desire, without any material desire, or desire and liberation, he must by all means worship the supreme whole, the personality of Godhead. So this is all nicely described throughout this chapter, in this verse, of how we should actually, you know, the essential message is that devotional service to Krishna is the perfection of life. And if we worship Krishna in loving devotion, anyone can attain the highest good. Even material or selfish desires can be purified and dovetailed in bhakti. So here we see marriage as a journey, actually. So two people, they agree to walk the path of household life to ultimately reach the destination of full spiritual advancement by aiding each other along the way. Another analogy I heard is spouses can be like a musical instrument. When they're played harmoniously with care, skill, and cooperation, the husband and the wife, they can resonate very beautifully. But they require practice and maintenance. So, actually, in the beginning of the movement, Srila Prabhupada, he got 90% of his disciples married. And then for some reason around this 75, 76, there was like propaganda. Okay, no more marriage, no marriage. So, but that was not so good. So in ISKCON, most people and everywhere, we need female, male energy. You know, we have to get it in the proper way, whether it's gross or subtle. Or else we just end up getting it in the improper way. And marriage helps us with selfishness. And that's real renunciation really means to see the whole world as a family. So that's real selflessness. So we see everybody, whether you're a woman or a man, everybody has their own natures and desires. They're not all the same. So like, you know, just marry a woman, they're all the same. You know, they're just like if they're things. But everybody, they have their own natures. So we have to be honest. If we're honest, we can advance. Because first of all, you have to know where you are before you can figure out where you're going, right? Where am I? So then you have to know if you're going to Krishna, you have to know where Krishna is. And then that way you can get there. So if we're not honest and we're deceitful, pretentious, you know, wanting fame and honor, but we have to be real like Kardama Muni, who knew where he was at. Actually, regarding pretentiousness, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, pretentiousness is like a low-class prostitute who eats dogs. And she is dancing in the heart of her lover, who is pretension and deceit. So that's why there's different varnas, there's different ashrams. People have different backgrounds, education, compatibility, physically, mentally. But how do you tell? And Prabhupada gave a hint in the purport there. And first of all, we have to know ourselves, know your nature. You know, what your guna is, what your karma, family. You have to know the person. You know, if you're going to get married, you want to get references, you know, and astrology, you see. But you have to look, you can't just take astrology and look at one thing in astrology. Like some people just look at the moon or compatibilities, but it's actually described, one has to go over the entire chart, the whole chart. And you have to find a good astrologer, which is rare. So it's probably better to find a few astrologers, check. So anyway, it's very rare. But there are some. So arranged marriages in ISKCON, they didn't consider this astrologer. They used to say, oh, she's tall and he's tall, they should get married. Or something like that. You see? I even know an astrologer said, don't worry if you're not compatible. You know, he was just doing a compatible chart. He goes, because you're devotees. It doesn't matter. But actually, all those marriages didn't work. So the most important factor, though, is to ask Krishna. He's the root of everything. We need the grace of God. We shouldn't think that I shouldn't ask Krishna for this. You know, Kardama Muni didn't think like that. Because generally, Krishna wants his devotees to have happy marriages. Sometimes he may want them to have unhappy marriages, like King Anga. You know, he's a terrible wife. That's a whole other story. So, I mean, you can't show me one person who doesn't have problems. You know, and if you can't solve your problems, you can see maybe I can use them somehow or another in Krishna consciousness. You see, because most people can't just do bhakti. They have to take material life and offer that to Krishna. There's a really nice article I found in the bhakti, in the Back to Godhead. It was by Vishakha Devidasi. And she gives some items on what makes marriage difficult and what makes marriage smooth. So just a few points she mentions. So what makes marriage difficult, she says, was one, weakness of character. So like indulging in premarital relationships, you know, it denies your spiritual strength and also later causes for dissatisfaction, and then one becomes needy, like a neediness in marriage. And then two, she says, incompatibility. So lacking matched qualities and nature causes disappointment. So good matchmaking ensures compatibility. And then the third thing inability to hear, not truly listening and understanding your spouse's perspective causes conflict. So must emphatically hear our spouses. And then fourth, self-righteousness. It's like condemning your spouse's faults from a superior position. It poisons a relationship. So we should have humility and respect. And then five, quitting. Giving up too easily on marriage rather than overcoming problems. So we have to have that commitment and tolerance. And then the sixth thing she mentions is selfishness. Only caring about one's own needs and not the spouse's. That causes disconnect and makes it very unbalanced. So she said, what causes it to be smooth? And so there's six items here also. So the first one is enthusiasm. You know, we're eagerly serving our spouse in Krishna consciousness. Makes it natural and pleasing. Gratitude. Appreciating your spouse's devotional qualities, you know, and service that fosters harmony. Affection. Embracing intimate exchanges of love nourishes the bond. Contentment. Accepting oneself and your spouse and situation, it dissolves resentments. So just accept yourself, accept your spouse, accept the situation. And then the fifth thing was long-term vision. Setting spiritual advancement as life's goal, it gives a proper perspective. And then the last thing, Krishna consciousness. Engage in devotional activities, it sanctifies the home. So that's, it's kind of a nice call to action she gives there on devotees, what they should do. You see, because if we're attached to Krishna for advancement, then the relationship of cooperation is very effective, you know, for their advancement. And then it mentioned in the purport about the value of a good wife, how it supersedes wealth and children. So if one has a nice wife, Prabhupada says in the purport, he's to be considered a most fortunate man. And in astrology, they say, one's fortunate if he has good wealth, if he has good sons, or if he has a good wife. But of all those, if one has a good wife, it's considered to be most fortunate. So Prabhupada mentioned before marrying, we should select a wife of like disposition and not be attracted just by so-called beauty. So it's interesting how Prabhupada established an equal position spiritually for women in ISKCON while he still emphasized care and protection. And then he gave guidance on how to have a successful marriage between spiritually developed equals that facilitate Krishna consciousness. Prabhupada says in the Srimad Bhagavatam that everyone should be allowed to render service to the Lord to the best of his ability. And everyone should appreciate the service of others. Such are the activities of Vaikuntha, the spiritual world. So Prabhupada actually established the grounds where women can take non-traditional roles like temple leaders, yet he cautioned against intermingling. So this strengthens the messages that spouses should respect each other, you know, as spiritually evolved equals and assist each other in devotional service despite social designations. So when this applies to marriage, then we can retain that spiritual culture. So it's interesting how Prabhupada trained up his devotees, the women, men, children. And Prabhupada said, even a woman can defeat a scientist and a Mayavadi sannyasi. And even a child can, for that matter. This was Prabhupada. This is the glory of Prabhupada. And then there's some examples we see throughout the Srimad Bhagavatam of exemplars. There's Sukanya. Even though she was married to an irritable old sage, she was determined to do her best as a role of the wife. And she surrendered her pride and just persevered. And then there's Mandodari. That's Ravana's wife. Despite knowing of his evil nature, she remained loyal to him in the end. So that demonstrates tolerance of the spouse's faults. And then Sita, she insisted on accompanying Ram into exile to stay by her husband's side rather than remain in comfort. It shows that she was dedicated above all conveniences. And then we have Sudama, the Brahmana, his wife. She was more concerned for her husband's well-being. And so she lovingly urged him to go see Krishna. So that exemplified selflessness. And then there's the wives of the Brahmanas. They joyfully recognized Krishna's position and they served him and his friends. Unlike their husbands who were like puffed up, you know, they're doing their pujas. So that's nice. And then there's Draupadi. She depended, they cared for herself in crisis without waiting for her husband to rescue her. So that illustrated internal strength. And then there's Priyavrata, how he unresentfully accepted his father's order to marry and rule, though he preferred spiritual pursuit. So that it epitomizes contentment in all situations. And then even some of our local exemplars, like Prabhupada, despite being a woman, he appointed Jadarani Devidasi to be the leader over the male artists. See, so that exemplifies competence over designations. And then we have the wives who went to London to preach. You know, they were successful where sannyasis had failed. So that's nice. And then there's Sukanya, which we can see in contrast to the self-controlled Kumaris. There's these Kumaris, these are women that are trained in self-discipline. You know, so they could become pure and devoted in their youth, and then they become very fit for marriageability. So this is nice. So there's Sukanya. This, you know, compared to the Kumaris, her perseverance as a wife, despite an unfavorable match, is even more remarkable. So that's all described there. So another analogy is that marriage is compared to a fortress. You know, it's created by the husband and wife to protect themselves from the powerful enemies of the uncontrolled senses and peacefully make spiritual advancement. So this casts marriage as a safe haven amidst dangers where spouses can help each other progress spiritually. So there's in the third canto in the pregnancy of Diti in the evening, there's a verse there, it says, as a fort commander very easily conquers invading plunderers, by taking shelter of a wife, one can conquer the senses, which are unconquerable in the other spiritual orders. Prabhupada gives a nice purport there and talks about the different ashrams, you know, the in household life. Of them all, household life is most secure because a faithful wife can protect the husband from the onslaughts of the demanding senses. And then there's another section there in the fourth canto when the attack on Chandavega in the city of Paranjana. And in the purport there, Srila Prabhupada says, if a man is in good consciousness, he consults with his religious wife, and as a result of this consultation with intelligence, one advances his ability to estimate the value of life. In other words, if one is fortunate enough to have a good conscientious wife, he can decide by mutual consultation that human life is meant for advancing in Krishna consciousness and not for begetting a large number of children. Children are called parinama or byproducts. And when one consults his good intelligence, he can see that his byproducts should be the expansion of his Krishna consciousness. And there's another analogy. Marriage as a temple. The home itself can become as good as Vaikuntha when centered around the deity worship and hosting devotees. You know, then like the husband and wife are like the priests of the temple. And then there's a purport in the fourth canto when Maharaj Prithu goes back home. And Prabhupada says there in the purport, according to Bhaktivinoda Thakur also, a husband and wife can turn the home into a place as good as Vaikuntha, even while in this material world. Being absorbed in Krishna consciousness, even in this world, husband and wife can live in Vaikuntha simply by installing the deity of the Lord within the home and serving the deity according to the directions of the Shastras. In this way, they will never feel the sex urge. That is the test of advancement in devotional service. One who is advanced in devotional service is never attracted by sex life. And as soon as one becomes detached from sex life and proportionally attached to the service of the Lord, he actually experiences living in the Vaikuntha planets. In the ultimate issue, there's actually no material world. But when one forgets the service of the Lord and engages himself in the service of the senses, he is said to be living in the material world. So that's described there. So here's Kardama Muni actually did that. You can see he created a fortress and a temple. That's his aerial mansion he created, a very fabulous castle he created for his wife using his mystic powers. And it was described that it was so marvelous that even Kardama Muni himself was astonished at what he created. So that's so nicely described there. So there's a very nice story of this, how we can apply this wisdom in our life. And the essence is that we should love God no matter what situation we're in. So we had some idea to talk about the topics here, of the prayer. But I'll just kind of sum it up of his prayer here, as I mentioned. O Lord of unfathomable compassion, I seek the shelter of your lotus feet, the vessel to cross over illusion. Guide this longing heart through the cycle of time and grant me devotion's vision to see your eternal form in loving service divine. So this is the importance of prayer. Even though the Lord may know, still it's good to pray. So just to summarize maybe the Lord's response, I'll just say it here. O sage, I know your heart's desire. A bride is arranged. Her father coming through her wisdom will dawn. Kapila, appear. Take shelter of me in true service. Resign all fruitive actions. You know my bliss. Spread compassion. Perceive all souls in me. So that's really nice how he describes how to perceive every Krishna and everything. So this is, it described the beauty of Kardama Muni. It said that your son, he will be characterized by his golden hair and his eyes, just like lotus petals. So it shows it's a very divine form is going to come, full of purity. So bhakti as the rising sun dispels the darkness of illusion. And maya as an illusion, tricking the souls like a spell. And then how the Lord is so kind, he even blesses those rotting in hellish pleasures, how he comes to give us this knowledge, this transcendental literatures. And how material desires are like a forest fire, extinguished by the rain of the Guru's mercy. That's that verse, Sam Sarada Vana Ladali Loka. The spiritual master is receiving benediction from the ocean of mercy, just as a cloud pours water in a forest fire to extinguish it. And this is Srila Prabhupada, the vessel, the Lord's lotus feet is that vessel to cross over illusion. That's a nice metaphor which describes illusion. We're in maya, suffering, but the Lord comes. He sends his vessel, the spiritual master who represents his lotus feet. And here's his lotus feet. It's very beautiful. Your lotus feet, which are the source of everything, and you are like a desire tree. And so surrendering to God is also like a dependent parent. You know, a child dependent on his parent. You see, does the servant suffer when he serves the master? You know, does a rich man's servant have to ask separately? And the father and the son, they have a deeper relationship than a servant and a master. And the father will go out of his way to take care of his son, especially if the son is obedient. Even a poor man will do the best he can to help his dependence. So, I'm talking about spiritual, this will end here. This is talking about spiritual family. Just to see intense family love in the spiritual world is revealed in the Brihat Bhagavatamrita. And you'll know that story. Krishna was returning from the forest with his friends and his cows, and the sweet sound of his flute already overwhelmed the residents of Vrindavan with love. And when Krishna spotted Gopakumar, whom he recognized as his lost long friend, Sarup, he became overjoyed. And then leaving behind all the other cowherd boys and cows, Krishna ran toward to meet his friend. And then Gopakumar became stunned by intense feelings of ecstatic love upon seeing the incredibly beautiful form of Krishna coming towards him. Krishna was dressed like a coward boy with a peacock feather crown and forest garments, and his lotus face shone with a beautiful smile. And then, unable to contain his own loving emotions, Krishna leaped forward to embrace Gopakumar. Overpowered by love, Gopakumar then fainted in Krishna's arms. Surprised, Krishna also fell unconscious to the ground while still holding his friend. So all the local coward men and women were shocked to see their life and soul Krishna lying on the ground motionless. They cried out in alarm and lamented over who could have caused this. And then the cows and calves also came. They expressed their distress and they're weeping, they're licking Krishna's body. It was an incredibly dramatic and touching scene that illustrates the profound love between Krishna and his devotees in Vrindavan. So each of us in Krishna consciousness, we're inconceivably fortunate because Krishna is our best friend, he's our father, and he's on our side. And he wants us to establish a relationship with him. And that we're not with him is only due to our causeless unwillingness. So we pray to Krishna that we could get free of that. So Gopakumar, he was actually a liberated soul, and he embarked on this journey that we know. He went through the material and spiritual worlds. And then when he arrived in Goloka Vrindavan, the topmost spiritual abode, he was awestruck there by the residents' intense love for Krishna. Even though they appeared distraught, he couldn't tell whether they were immersed in distraught or they were in ecstasy. So it's very nicely described there. And then some of the details from the Brihad Bhagavatamrita, they explain how the gopis of Vrindavan are considered greater than all the other transcendentalists in their relationship with Krishna. So there's just two points here I'd like to make. How the gopis, they possess an unmatched love and devotion for Krishna that comes from most intimate dealings. As Krishna himself told Uddhava, the minds of the gopis are completely absorbed in thoughts of him at all times, to the point of forgetting everything else, including their own bodies, relatives, household duties, and even their hopes for their future. Their consciousness is totally immersed in Krishna, much like great yogis are absorbed in samadhi and transcendental trance. However, the crucial difference is that while the yogis may forget material names, forms, and bodily designations, the gopis, they never forget Krishna's names, forms, pastimes, and qualities. So just see, even though the gopis were here, some of them lived in the mature world as householders, their love with and their relationship with the Supreme Lord is on the highest level of perfection. And this shows how Krishna Prem transcends ordinary piety or renunciation, and how many liberated souls respect and hanker for such pure devotion, but rarely attain it. So we see this is the highest form that we can experience. So that's the end of that there. So I'd like to thank you for your kind patience and attention. And if anybody has any comments or questions, maybe we can open it up for any discussion if you have time. Yes. He's waiting for the mic. Yes, Shyam Chandra, Prabhu.
Yeah, thank you for the nice class, Prabhu. Sometimes, when you have like a dirty water,
you
kind of purify it like through different layers.
Yes.
Like sometimes when you have really dirty water that you have like a product in Costco, like 7-stage purification or 5-stage purification.
Yes.
So all this brahmacharya, grihastha, vanaprastha, it's kind of a purification. And depending on how dirty the water is, that means that, that much purification is required. And
yeah.
Sometimes every layer has its own role to play. Like the kind of purification done in brahmacharya is different from the kind of purification in grihasthas. And it's kind of different purification in a vanaprastha. So it's kind of irreplaceable. Like one is kind of irreplaceable with the other thing. And the success actually in each stage is depending upon previous stage. Like a good brahmachari can make a good grihastha, or a good grihastha can make a good sannyasi, because they have already cleansed those things. And on the other hand, if there's a bad brahmachari, he'll be a bad grihastha.
Yes.
As a bad grihastha, he'll be a bad sannyasi too, because he did not go through that proper process and still they have those things. But however, you know, but not everyone is kind of fortunate to go through all those things, especially in Los Angeles. Imagine right. having a good brahmachari yes. and having a good sannyas. So that means that we may have no need to have some other alternative along with this to have a purification, and that is bhakti. That is why even
exactly.
Prabhupada, even though he knows that most of them are not really having a good wives or good brahmacharya or good childhood upbringing, but still because they have such a strong bhakti, which is already a purification process, so he kind of like even gave sannyas to many young devotees also. So that's why, you know, the point I want to make is that, you know, the purification is, in our aspect, is not, you know, it's kind of like there are more to it. Like, you know, there's bhakti, which is very potent, because getting a good wife, not everybody is really fortunate, right? Then yeah. what about those who didn't really have a good wife? I mean, but still, the purification is still possible in that process. Yeah, just a point.
Thank you. That's a good analogy of the filter, water filtering system. But yeah, we have to be honest and, you know, realize where we are. If you're more like a renounced person and you get married, then it's not going to be compatible. Or if you're, you know, you can't. We have to be honest and then go through particular stages. So, is there another? Anybody have? Yes.
This is for people in Grastha that are not fully in, that are running around in the daily world and. Are in touch with Krishna. I actually speak for my own self. I've been here, I came here 30 years ago and was here dedicated 10 years, but unfortunately I couldn't stay here. In spite of being in Krishna consciousness, there's always this disconnect of senses. The senses are desiring pleasure now. Okay. Going on Krishna's path is like a more long-drawn kind of an exercise. And this I'm watching almost as a detached observer of this body, of how it's getting drawn towards the immediate thing and getting frustrated after 30 years of saying, you know, I'm not getting that same, because this whole sense compartment is like a separate division altogether. It's playing its own part. And then there is the other side, you want to desire Krishna, but the senses are demanding immediate pleasure. In whatever connection it might be. There's highs and lows. You go up and down. You get a project. Then you're down. And then now you want to maybe get a chocolate or go talk to somebody. It's a constant ride, basically, right?
Yes.
And in that ride, the senses are saying, okay, Krishna, I'm not getting the high right now. I need it right now. So how do you handle these two hard departments that, yeah, it's a long term. I understand you're going for the heavenly boat and you're going to hang out with Krishna, but the senses are saying, okay, that's all good, fair and good, that's all carrot, but I need it now, like this moment. So that disconnect, first and foremost, why is there such a big disconnect? Why Krishna cannot open up a department to get that highs, if you will? I know it might be temporary, but that's the desire of the senses right now. So how do you connect that imbalance here?
Yes, that's a good point. But we come back to the basics. There's the ABCs of Krishna consciousness, and we have to get a higher taste, give up a lower taste by getting a higher taste. And we could go through the ABCs. A, it would be like we have to associate with devotees who have that taste, and by, you know, associating with devotees and things like that, like you're doing coming to the temple. And B is that we have to really dive into the books. We have to, you know, understand and read, elevate the consciousness to change our thoughts, that there's higher things, see the bigger perspective. And we could just go through these A, B, C, D, all these things, and we have to understand that we can advance like that. So there's also our diet, it's prasadam, we have to offer our food to Krishna. That helps purify the food and also that we take the prasadam, our senses become purified. We become spiritualized. And ultimately, you go to D is like devotion. We have to develop that love for Krishna. So yeah, we pray to Krishna like Kardamamuni had that desire. He wanted to get married. He wanted to satisfy his lust, and he went to Krishna for that. And Krishna fulfilled that desire. At the same time, he became purified. So he used it in Krishna's consciousness. So that's why we read and we understand the philosophy. So we see, okay, I have these desires, I have these things, but can I dovetail these in Krishna consciousness? Or are they completely, they're completely to be abandoned. So we learn to accept things favorable for Krishna consciousness, and we learn to reject things unfavorable for Krishna consciousness. So we get that through association, reading, offering our food, and study like that. So, yeah, is that okay?
Yeah. When you're going through these highs and lows, and if you do surrender to your temptation, I guess not to beat yourself and again go back to Krishna, never give up and be persistent.
Yeah.
I would say.
Never jump the boat.
Thank you.
Because there's going to be highs and lows, and sometimes the boat's going to get a little rocky, but we don't want to jump off the boat. We want to stay on the boat.
Thank you.
For Krishna consciousness. Yes. Thank you. Yes.
With all these things that you said and all the questions that you answer, these things take time and practice.
Exactly.
It just doesn't come. It doesn't work like that.
Yeah. That's the point I made. I think it was an analogy where the spouses are like a musical instrument. You have to... When they're played harmoniously with care, skill, cooperation, that way the husband and wife, they resonate beautifully, but it requires practice and maintenance. So that's a good point. Yeah. Okay, another comments, realizations? All right, thank you so kindly. Appreciate you. Jai, all glories to Srila Prabhupada, all glories to Srimad Bhagavatam.